This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast, episode number 176. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an exclusive interview with General Albert Stubblebein and is being released on Saturday, September 14, 2013. This interview with General Burt was recorded on Friday the 13th, September 13, 2013. And General Burt is a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, class of 52, who enjoyed a distinguished 32-year career in the U.S. Army. He retired as the commanding general of the United States Army Intelligence and Security Command, or INSCOM. Prior to this assignment, he commanded the U.S. Army Electronics Research and Development Command, or ERADCOM. During his active duty career, he commanded soldiers at every level. After his retirement, he served as the VP for Intelligence Systems at BDM, a major defense contractor. He has brought these experiences to leading-edge medical research and development into collaboration with his wife, Rima Elebo, MD, who was here just a couple of days ago on the Gnostic Media podcast, and we're going to be going into much more that does tie directly into that interview, as well as my recent interview with Clint Richardson. And General Burt is also a long-term out-of-the-box thinker who redesigned the U.S. Army intelligence architecture while serving as the commanding general in the U.S. Army's Intelligence School and Center. This intelligence restructuring earned him his place in the Intelligence Hall of Fame. Among his other accomplishments, he participated in a special task force which defined the requirements of the U.S. Army for future conflict. Many of the innovations he developed helped the U.S. to conduct the first Gulf War effectively and swiftly with a very low casualty rate. Having defended his country for 32 years and having worked for the remainder of his career to build better ways of becoming and being well, Burt is determined to not let the forces which are threatening Americans' health freedoms prevail. Formerly a warrior for America's military, now he is a warrior for America's health and personal freedom. Donations. This episode is brought to you by Charles, Lee, Ryan, and Kim and Dave. Thank you so much to all of you for making this episode possible. And of course, we do our best to provide just about everything here for free, so your donations and website purchases are hugely appreciated. This show is run on donations and the website sales. This is not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. And good news, we finally have the Gnostic Media Wheat Blows bumper stickers in. I'll get a link for that up on the Gnostic Media website on the store page as soon as possible. So please grab some of those to help us continue what we do here, which is helping inform all of you. And we still have the Gnostic Media bookmarks that have the logical fallacies on the back for each book order, and those are also available individually up there on the website, or actually in three or a dozen. And of course, by donating or ordering one of the books or a DVD or the She Who Remembers Archives, a t-shirt, or getting a membership to the website to download the older shows, the first 4 years of the Gnostic Media podcast on disc, etc., as well as the new Wheat Blows bumper stickers, you help to continue this unprogramming, and we greatly appreciate your support. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. The website is www.gnosticmedia.com. That's GNOSTICmedia.com. You can reach me through the contact form on the website or directly at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support. And here is my exclusive interview with General Albert Stubblebein. Enjoy.
All right.
But thank you and good to see you, Rima. And I'm looking forward to this interview with you, Burt. And if I may call you Burt, what should I call you for the interview?
Most people call him General Burt.
General Burt. All right. General Burt.
And I don't give a damn.
He doesn't give a damn. So,
yeah. Well, all
right. Well,
he's pretty loosey goosey.
Yeah. All right. Well, General Burt, why don't we start off with having you, and I'll get back to this question, this thing that I was going to mention about sticking with stupid in a bit here. But why don't we start off with you telling the audience about who you are, your background, your history, etc.
Well, before I do that, let me ask you just a couple of questions. What do you plan to do with this when we're through with it, assuming that you like what you hear?
Well, if we both agree that we can get this information out, I'm going to edit it together just as I did with Rima's show and put it up on the website with hers.
Okay. Do we get to look at what you put up first, or does it just...
Sure, we can arrange that to happen. I mean, you know, obviously I'm assuming that there's probably things that you're not allowed to talk about. Would that be a correct assumption?
Well, that's part of it, yeah. And there are things that... that I can talk about but don't want to talk about too much simply because of what we're doing. You know, there are things that are, you know, classified, that's one category, but there are other things that are significant in terms of what we're doing that I don't want to get out too prematurely. So I got to be a little bit careful about, you know, the water we tread in. So,
okay. All right. Well, that's respectable, and I do appreciate your time coming on. Obviously, you were the head of Army intelligence, et cetera, or a major factor in that.
100 years ago.
100 years ago. Well, and you know, 100 years ago, when the likes of Alan Dulles and Aldous Huxley were running things over at the CIA, they spun some pretty wild stuff, and I know that the Army was connected to a lot of those studies and things, and I'm somewhat of a MK Ultra expert. I know how a lot of these operations work, but you know, why don't we start off with you talking about your background and just explain who you are? You know, who is the famous General Burt Stubblebine?
Okay, I will. I'll be happy to start with a little bit of background. I worry about that word famous a little bit, but I actually am an Army brat. So I grew up in the Army. My dad was a West Point graduate, class of 1924. You know, he was a career officer. He served his 30 years. And my life started started at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, which is where I was born. But 6 months later, I was in the Philippines because Dad was transferred to the Philippines. And so home was just where you hung your hat. You didn't get in love with a place because it never lasted more than 4 years and most frequently was three or less. So home was just simply where you hung your hat. At age five, actually age five, six, and seven, Dad was stationed at West Point. He was in the quartermaster, but he was responsible for building the new airport that was going in that region. And so he, for 3 years, actually 4 years, was stationed back at West Point, and I was a kid. I was five, 6, and 7 years old. Well, one of the fascinating things about it in those days was that every officer at West Point who was stationed at West Point, permanent officer stationed at West Point, was required to be at the Saturday morning parade. There was a, you know, cadet parade every Saturday morning, and so every family with all of the kids went to the Saturday morning parade. Well, I, at age five, six, and seven, would stand out on the parade ground in front of the seats where all of the officers were sitting. I would stand there and essentially at attention while the parade was taking place. And at about age six or seven, I'm not quite sure when, I decided that that is exactly what I was going to do with my life. And from that moment on, everything that I did between age six and the time that I entered the academy was to make sure that I was prepared to pass all of the exams, both physical and mental and blah, 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 but pass everything so that I could enter West Point and graduate as a young second lieutenant. And that's exactly what I did. Graduated in 1952 and had selected armor as my branch. I thought I was going to be another Georgie Patton Jr. running across the fields of Germany because I thought World War III was inevitable. And
he got assassinated. That wouldn't be good.
Well, yeah, correct. But literally, I expected to enjoy being a tanker and on the fields of Europe, and actually got to Germany after my tour at Fort Knox immediately after graduation. And one short tour in the United States, I was suddenly in Germany. And I was a young second lieutenant, still green behind the ears. I was so young and inexperienced that I didn't have a clue what I was really doing. And my first company commander, it was kind of interesting. I was standing out in the hallway waiting for an interview with my new boss, my company commander, who was a captain. I was, again, a young, brand-new second lieutenant. And what I heard was him saying, "What a goddamn second lieutenant. I don't need a goddamn second lieutenant. I need a good sergeant." Oh, wow. That was my introduction to Harvey Land, who was then turned out to be my company commander. And I fell in love with him, literally, because here was a guy, fourth grade education, who had been a cowboy, he had been a Texas Ranger. He knew terrain, honest to Pete, he knew terrain better than anybody I have ever met in my entire life. He didn't need a map. He didn't need anything. He just knew everything about the terrain. And what he did with me was he said, "Okay," he took me out of my tank. He said, "Okay, you sit in the back seat." There was no back seat of the Jeep at those days, and was nothing but a big radio. And he put me on the radio. He took me everywhere he went. He said, "All right, I want you to keep your eyes and ears open, your mouth shut. Got it?" You know, what was my answer to that? "Yes, sir." And literally, I learned more in that period of time with that man, with his fourth grade education, than I have ever learned from anybody in my life. I literally would follow this guy to the end of the world in combat, because if anybody could get you through alive, it was Harvey Land. It was that simple. And that was my beginning. And my life after that was nothing but repetition of the lessons that I learned from this magnificent fourth grade education, beautiful person. And so I owe a lot of my success to my very beginning with Harvey Land.
May I ask you how you went from there into to be the commanding general of the United States Army Intelligence and Security Command?
Yeah, I was one of my tours was back at West Point. I was a professor of chemistry at West Point for 4 years, And in my third year, I was only supposed to be there three. My end of my third year, I got an assignment to Korea as an intelligence officer. I said, no, 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 no. I'm an armor officer. I don't want to go to Korea as an intelligence. I don't mind going to Korea, but I want to go as an armor officer, not as an intelligence officer. They said, no, you're going as an intelligence officer. So what I did, I talked to my boss, the head of the chemistry department, and I said, I'd like to extend a year. Would that be okay with you? And so the answer was yes. So I extended my tour at West Point for a year, and 1 year later, so help me Hannah, I got the exact same assignment to Korea as an intelligence officer. And I couldn't extend again, and so I went kicking and screaming to Korea as an intelligence. Oh, man, I was angry and troubled. And I got to Korea, and I got assigned doing counterintelligence work, which, I didn't even know what I was doing. And I'd been there only about a week or 10 days. And I got my boss came to me. My boss was a full colonel. He came to me and he said, report to the SYNC. SYNC is commander in chief of all the forces in Korea. I said, what did I do wrong? He said, shut up, go report to the SYNC. So I did. And I walked into his office, saluted, and he said, Lieutenant, no, I think I was a captain by that time. He said, Captain, I can't remember what a lieutenant or captain, but in any event, he said, you are going to redo the North Korean order of battle. Okay? I didn't know what order of battle meant. I saluted and said, yes, sir. I walked back to my boss. I said, I don't understand what I'm doing. He said, shut up, sign here. I said, well, okay, what am I signing? He said, shut up. I said, okay. And he said, come with me. He took me to this Quonset hut that I had passed every day going to the mess hall. It was all black and locked up and what. I walked in. And under lock and key, signed the papers that were necessary. He said, okay, over there, here's the tool that you're going to use to redo the order of battle, of North Korean order of battle. I walked over, and I thought, oh, my goodness gracious, because what I was looking at were aerial photography of North Korea. I mean, way behind, you know, they had the DMZ, but and all of the caves that were on our side. But from there, you could see the entrance to the caves in which they had bored a hole through the mountain so that they could have artillery and tanks sticking out of holes on the side of the DMZ facing us. But you could also see where all of the units were located. You could identify the company commands. You could identify the battalions, you know, right on back up to the head guys. You could see everything. I don't know where my Korean tour went. I was so busy. I worked 24/7. I didn't take any time off. I just work to finish this project to create the what the SYNC wanted. And at the end of my tour, I had finished it, took it up, showed him what had been done. He thanked me profusely, and I came home. I was back in the States. And in retrospect, I was thinking, holy smokes, what am I going to do in tanks, in armor? And the answer is, I would do nothing except maneuvers. Because by that time, I said, World War III is not going to happen in my lifetime, or at least in my tour time. And I'll be bored stiff as a tanker, just running around doing exercises. Instead, intelligence, I'm doing a task that is absolutely required. It's real. It's not fake. It's not for fun. It's not for games. Everything that you do will be for real. So I transferred branches. I transferred from tanks to intelligence. And after that, I never played another game my entire career. Everything that I did was for a purpose. It was real. It was needed. It was essential, because it was the key to what all of the commanders with the forces were going to do. They needed to know the information so that they could make a decision as to where and how and what they needed to do in the field. So again, I never played another game once I had transferred, or once I'd been in that job in Korea. I never played another game. Everything was real. Everything was exciting. Everything had passion. Everything had purpose. And so you just enjoyed what you were doing, even though you were working your ass off.
What do you mean when you say redo the North Korean order of battle? Does that have something to do with psychological operations and things like that?
No, it has primarily to do with, where is everybody located? Where's the command headquarters? Where are the subunits? Are they tanks? Are they infantry? Are they artillery? Where is the artillery? Where is all of the communication line set up? How is it set? So that once you see the picture, you got a pretty damn good idea of exactly what he can do, which is essential. See, not what he might do, but what is he able to do, because now you know his capacity so that you know what you need as in a counteraction. You need the kind of force that will either overcome it if you attack, or overcome any attack on his side. Very critical information for a commanding officer who is responsible for the planning that is needed.
What kind of chemistry is Professor of Chemistry? What kind of chemistry were you involved at West Point?
Well, I was my degree is in industrial chemistry. But I was actually teaching, first of all, I taught just basic chemistry to the class. But while I was there, interestingly enough, they began to do elective courses. Now, some of the elective courses you were able to elect them. But in other cases, if you were high enough in your class, for instance, and high enough in your class in mathematics, you then were taken out of your normal class. You were very carefully selected. And
just interrupt you just for a second. Would you put your Skype on Do Not Disturb up there in the...
But as they had split the class so that the really smart guys took their basic chemistry course in half the time. So they did it in, instead of doing it in two semesters, essentially, did it in one. And what that did then was to open up another semester for them to take an advanced chemistry course. And what I was assigned to do was to develop that advanced chemistry course and then teach these real smart guys, actually two of us, there were two of the instructors that were given this responsibility. So I was one of the II that was sort of speeded up in my in what I was teaching, and not only teaching a basic course, but it was also teaching an advanced chemistry course. So it was kind of exciting.
Did they ever get you wrapped up in any of those secret? I know West Point was used as one of the places where they were doing some of the nefarious studies on people. What can you say about that in West Point?
Not much, because I was totally unaware of it at the time, and I absolutely was thinking armor all of that time. As a matter of fact, I was very frustrated because I was there as a professor or assistant professor, and I wanted to be a tanker, and so that was a very frustrating period. And then it got more frustrating when I got this assignment to be an intelligence officer, but it actually was a turning point in my entire life. So that was the key to getting me interested in the intelligence world. And from there, I very quickly commanded at every level of, as a lieutenant colonel, I commanded as a full colonel, I commanded as a brigadier general. I even commanded as a major, which is not usual, but the circumstance that I got to even be in a command as a major. So I've had a lot of command experience in leading people in multiple situations.
All right, well, let me ask you just straightforwardly. Obviously a lot of people are going to be upset with me for having the former head of Army Intelligence on my show. And, of course, they're going to say, why should they trust me? Why should they trust anything you say? So how can we get them to, how can we overcome their fears without any logical fallacies? And, get them to not kill the messenger, either myself or you, and just hear what we're here to present, to discuss.
Well, one way to do that is I will be very, very frank. I do not give interviews. You have been chosen because I trust you.
So then they're going to say, well, Jan has to be dirty because you trust me and you're doing the only interview except, for the first episode of, that BBC film where they, they sort of attacked you.
Well, which is exactly why I said no more interviews, period. And it was kind of interesting because I was reluctant to, I was not too reluctant early on to give interviews. But every interview that I gave early on, they would agree that I'd get a chance to see what was going to be said, and then it would appear in the press or in a magazine or whatever without my looking at it. And so I finally got to a point where I'm not going to do any more interviews, period. And so you would not have been given this opportunity had I not checked you out. Period.
Okay, well, and I already know the CIA has been running a file on me for a while, so.
Well, what do you think they're doing with me?
Well, we can compare each other's files one day. So, I've exposed...
Maybe only the CIA is after you. I would not be surprised if both CIA and NSA anyway.
Yeah, anyway. But, with my work, I've my research on MKUltra, I have exposed a number of former agents in various areas. And, we're always... finding more. Essentially, once you figure out how the system works, it's not too hard to you know, I get that it appears that what they're, a lot of this is based on, as far as intel and the mind is concerned, it seems to be along the lines of Marshall McLuhan and a lot of these guys, and using the classical trivium, using logical fallacies and appeals to emotion, switching the conversation off to another topic with the red herring, all of these sorts of tactics. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's part of the game.
That's part of the game.
Yeah. I mean, incidentally, they played that same game with me in many, many occasions.
So they play, they play the game against their own, you're saying?
That's right. Yeah, they play the game, you know, against me. And which is why I stopped giving interviews, simply because what was intended, no, what was spoken to me as the intent turned out to be not the real intent. So, you know, you got to be very careful where you finally put your footprints.
What years were you the head of Army Intel?
My last 4 years, I was the head of what was then called INSCOM. I think it has changed its name these days, but it was the Intelligence and Security Command. And just to give some idea of what that meant was, I was responsible for all, I say again, all of the Army's strategic intelligence forces around the world. And I emphasize strategic because I was not involved in any of the tactical intelligence, but I did, was the commanding general for all of the Army's strategic intelligence forces everywhere in the world. And again, I emphasize the word Army because I had nothing to do except to coordinate with the Navy and the Air Force. We were very closely coordinated, but I was not responsible for the others. I was responsible for the armies. That answer the question pretty
yeah,
well?
Yeah, that's pretty good. You know, I was in there. I've got a few different questions here. I'm just thinking about comment, if you would, on... I assume you must have been pretty upset when you saw Men Who Stare at Goats come out and them depicting you as General Hopgood. What do you have to say about that?
Well, very, very reluctantly, I agreed to do that interview. I was nervous about that interview. And then suddenly I was trying to walk through walls. You know, I did the interview, and I was very frank with them. I was very open in terms of who I was and what I was trying to do.
What they did was then distorted, and this is often...
They totally distorted.
Sure. And, you know, what about, and let's also mention that it's...
Let me go back to the, okay. You know, the staring at goats. Because that's a very interesting piece of all of this. We were visiting INSCOM, and as we were walking, you know, there on the grounds... a comment was made about goats. They said, you know, we have a technology where you can stare at goats and shut their hearts down or explode their hearts. And wouldn't you like to know about that? I said, no, not really. That is not my responsibility. My responsibility is information that is then given to the G2 or G3 in other words, given to the G3, who is the operations officer, he is the one that would use that kind of technology. I am not responsible for that capability. Mine is the information that allows the operator to deploy the forces. He's the one that needs to know about the staring at the goats. So I totally, and I said, I even gave him the contact of where to take it at Fort Bragg, and then made the arrangements, told him at Fort Bragg, the boss at Fort Bragg, that this capability was available. What happened? Suddenly, I'm the guy that's staring at goats. I'm the guy that's trying to walk through walls. I'm the guy that's being made fun of and actually made to look, trying to make me look like an idiot.
Well, isn't
do that.
Let me just ask you, though, isn't that a normal military and intel tactic to make their own look foolish, to keep people from looking at them? I mean, you see this constantly with MKUltra, and they were just incompetent, they didn't know what they were doing. But when you get in and you actually study and look at the documents and research the citations, you see that this is an intentional tactic. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think that's exactly what happened. And
you were just their patsy, or
sure.
Can I ask you if you may have gone along with that?
Well, did I go along with that? I wanted to sue them.
Okay.
I literally thought very seriously about it. And then I thought, oh boy, if I do that, that's exactly what they want me to do, is to go off onto a tangent. So it takes me off of the direction that I want to go and need to go. So I finally decided, they've had their fun, but I'm not going to pay any more attention to it. And I've sort of thrown it, I just literally threw it away.
I just have to ask you that because, the audience is going to say, well, what if he went along with that and that was intentional? So I just want to cover that, that point.
Incidentally, do I believe that it's possible to do that with the heart? The answer is yes. I think you can do so many more things with your mind that we haven't even touched, not even touched anywhere near, Jan, the capability of what we can do with the mind when we set our minds to do it.
What do you think about the idea that there are no contradictions in nature, only in the mind of man?
No contradictions in nature. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I've really thought about that. First of all, I love nature, okay? I'm very close to nature. Where I'm living right now in Santiago, Chile, I've got an incredibly beautiful backyard that is with birds and of all varieties. And I love just to be out there in the energy of nature. I love to go walking in the woods. I love to be on the mountains. I love to be near waterfalls. So I love the wild. I'm very compatible with it.
Sure. Let me just clarify this issue, because when you look out in the world, all the things that you see, the trees, the birds, the plants, all of this stuff, these are all essentially nouns, things that you can identify with words.
Okay. Agreed.
And when you notice that, you never see two of these nouns in contradiction, hitting each other.
Nope.
Okay. And so, to me, that shows that there are no contradictions, that there are only contradictions in our minds. What if the premise of things like quantum physics were used, and quantum physics, and I've exposed some of this in the past with David Harriman, but what if quantum physics was used to get people to believe that they couldn't trust their own five senses to discover reality about them and to essentially disorder things? Whereas you, with, you know, with quantum physics, they say that you can have 11 or 12 contradictions in nature. What if the reason why all of these quantum physics guys are all saying that nobody understands quantum physics is because there are contradictions, and again, no contradictions in nature. And when we look in logic, a contradiction is obviously either a lie or an error. Okay, so and so what happens is, if we look at this whole thing, then we can say, well, you know, we see that it would be possible, it would be a really good intel tactic to get people to not trust their own five senses. And then, you know, they would have to then appeal to authority, for one, teachers, obviously military, presidents on up the list, the doctor in the white coat, etc. They wouldn't be able to gather the information of the who, what, where, and when. They would always go straight to why without any information. And then they would always be left to false conclusions. Would you agree with that?
Well, let's put it in very simple terms.
Okay.
It is clear that when you submit the mind to multiple energies, let's just call them energies for the moment, that you can move a person from a belief system to potentially a new belief system.
Sure.
I believe that can be done. No, I don't believe it. I know it can be done. Okay?
Sure.
Now, the real question then is, when that is done very subtly, will you recognize that it's being done so that you can do the counteraction that's necessary to keep you in the right frame of mind?
Edward Bernays.
Yep. And the answer to that is, yes, I believe that you can do that. However, most people will be totally unaware of what's going on and therefore will be carried into that fog.
Was that created intentional for them through the compulsory education system, though, that by not providing them critical thinking as they used to have, for instance, in the 1800s?
Well, I think that our educational system today is being tailored to create robots, frankly.
Sure. And that's, you know, going back to, you know, like Edward Bernays's opening line of his book Propaganda, and, you know, them creating this whole thing that you and Rima have done so well to expose, or her bringing this woman England's work to our attention regarding
Christine
England, who is exposing, which totally coincided with our work. I had discovered that it looked very obvious that Aldous Huxley was one of the key people, if not the head of MKUltra, directing the studies, etc., to be done.
Sure.
You agree with that statement, as the former head of Army Intel. And can you give any information on what Aldous Huxley's position was?
I don't think I should.
You can confirm that he was, though.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the head of the operation.
I'm pretty sure, yes.
Okay.
Let me explain why I'm not totally sure about that. Because
okay.
I don't know what was being done from above me.
Gotcha. Well, we know that...
I know where I was, but I'm not sure where the forces above me were.
Gotcha. Well, I can tell you that some of those forces above you were at the Century Association in New York, and they included guys like Eisenhower and Gordon Wasson and Aldous Huxley and Alan Dulles and Walter Lippmann and these guys. And then these guys would sit around the tables at the Century and they would organize this stuff, and they would, you know, clamor together with the Tavistock Institute and the Esalen Institute, and then they would pump all of these things out into society. Now, what we know, based from your work, from Huxley's work, and from the ancient Rig Vedas, is that they were trying to essentially recreate the Hindu caste system in Western culture to get people to give up their rights, their liberties, their ideas of freedom, and submit to an elite hierarchy caste, create this Delta or Epsilon caste of society that doesn't question anything, and essentially use the spirituality to get people to ignore critical thinking, and then merge that with the East. Would you agree with that?
Well, let me, before I say yes or no to that, let me back off just a tad.
Okay.
At the time when I was there, I believed so strongly in what I was doing. I believed so strongly in my government that they would never, ever, take me down a forbidden path, if you would, or a path that you probably didn't want to walk down. So I literally, at that time, had a pair of blinders, okay? I literally had the blinders on. And it wasn't until long after I'd retired that suddenly those blinders came off and I realized that what I had believed in all of my tour, the entire time that I was in the military, I realized that suddenly there is another agenda going on, and that agenda is not what I believed it was.
And was that agenda what I just described to you?
Yep.
And so how did I come to that conclusion on my own as the, and you and I, you being the former head of Army Intel, I mean, I reached that same conclusion just from my own research, and I figured out what was going on and how the intel and operations work. So, you know, obviously the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, but when you believe in the system so strongly that you reject all of those little pieces that are there that don't quite fit and they don't quite make sense.
Those contradictions or lies.
Yeah, but it's not until you suddenly realize and get your, again, when the blinders come off, you finally say, oh my God, there's a different environment. There's a different
agenda
that you did not even come close to thinking about when you were doing your job. And today, I feel that I was a dupe. I got duped, and I was part of the system because I believed in the system. And it wasn't until those blinders came off that I began to say, ooh, ask the questions. Ooh, that doesn't fit. Ooh, what's going on there? And then you realize that there's a totally different agenda out there than what you believed in.
Do you have any remorse for any of the things that you've done or any of the, since you figured out what was going on? Is there anything that you want to say to the people properly in any of that regard?
I think the only thing that I would, how do I want to put this? I think I should have gotten the blinders off earlier. I was so entrained, so convinced, so totally oriented in who I, what I believed in, that I refused to listen to the information that was coming in that contradicted that. And it wasn't until I suddenly had this awakening that that I began then to listen to the pieces that I, all of the pieces that I had rejected. And I, you know, it's kind of an interesting story of that awakening. I rarely get sick. I just, I don't get sick. Period. And I had gotten a flu, and I was in bed, and bored stiff because I had to be in bed. And I happened to see a photograph of the Pentagon. This was after 9/11, long after 9/11. And I looked at the picture, and of course, one of my really strong points in the intelligence world was photo interpretation, imagery interpretation, because I had commanded all of the Army's imagery interpretation systems on multiple commands that I was in. You know, I literally was responsible as the boss in many, many occasions on the Army's strategic photo interpretation capability. I know a lot about imagery interpretation. I looked at this picture of the Pentagon, and I said, something wrong with that picture. I don't understand what's giving me sort of a queasy feeling, but something is wrong with that photograph. So I began to look at it closer and closer and closer. And my conclusion was that an airplane did not make that hole in the side of the wall of the Pentagon. Well, I was so convinced that I went public. I'm I think the highest ranking person. I think I may be the only high ranking person that's gone public saying that the hole in the, no, that the story, the official story about what made the hole in the Pentagon was not correct, that that was a lie. Because, and I can prove that
was it was a tomahawk or what was it?
Well, I was very careful to not say what it was. I did say it was not an airplane.
No. Okay, so you're not, you're just saying that it is not that, that the evidence there and your expertise there,
story,
obviously a nose, a fiberglass nose cone on an airplane isn't going to go through, right. You know.
That's right. But the official story is not true. It's a lie. Period.
All right, so...
Now, incidentally, you can do anything you want with that, see? But once you know that it's not true, then you begin to question a lot of other pieces.
A lot of other things.
And everything then is questioned. It's not accepted as fact. And that's exactly where I am today.
Intel operators who put out disinformation, they have to stick with stupid is a term that I'm developing that I wanted to talk to you about. We sort of briefly touched on it at the beginning, but what I'm realizing is that there are willful idiots and people who are completely bought into it, and then there's the Intel guys. And the Intel guys come from various alphabet backgrounds and things like that. But what I am seeing is that somebody who is a willful idiot, they will generally, because there's, you know, they're not on the pay, they're not assigned to a duty, they will be willing to look at question or look at citations and look at things and generally be a little more open to question things. Whereas somebody who is a disinformation agent, they're paid to always stick with stupid, to always stick with the ignoring the facts, with attacking the person or any logical fallacy that they can throw out, you know, ad hominems, etc., anything to get surrounding people to not look at that information. And so they always stick with stupid. Would you agree with that?
The answer is yes. I would agree with that.
Is that more than you're supposed to expose?
No. I'm just thinking of. I'll tell you the thought that went through my mind is, okay, was I stupid?
You mean did they manipulate you in that sense and push that through with you?
Was I stupid? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, and some of these guys, you know, I think that they're probably often very informed of the actual situations, and then you know, they're paid to intentionally counter them via intentional logical fallacies to the contrary. Like, you know, we have the trivium method, which exposes the classical trivium. The classical trivium, which, you know, like guys like Marshall McLuhan wrote his PhD thesis on, you know, this is used to encirculate people's minds and to manipulate them, whereas the trivium method completely flips that wide open so that they have essentially no cover. Would you agree with that?
Yep. And, well, you know, just take a look at what happened with the book. I was not going to give that interview. And then they finally convinced me that they were going to do good things with it. In other words, they were going to do the purpose then was to fulfill the niche that needed to be done. And then what happened? I became the idiot. I became, and today I still believe that the book was published to make me look like an idiot so I would be disregarded. So nothing that I said would ever be taken as real again.
So then they could, you know, as you begin to wake up, they can use you as their bunt of any jokes regarding anything that you might expose on vaccines and autism or Aldous Huxley and the rest of it. I still want to try and one more time get his position out of you.
Well, I literally feel that I was put in that position exactly so that they could take anything that I said and make it look like it was baloney. You know, like BS.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, in an hour we've already covered a very in-depth...
Have we already been talking an hour? My God, I can't believe it.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, we've already actually covered the core of what I was essentially wanting to discuss with you about, and I'm glad that we seem to be on the same page with this stuff. And, of course, you know, people, some people, not many.
The answer to that is yes.
Yeah, and some people, not many, got upset for me having Rima on the show because of her relation with you and, you know, and all of this stuff, and I had... You know, asked a mutual friend of all of ours to introduce me to her and to you so that we could, you know, put this stuff out. Because, you know, I've been looking at all of this intel stuff and I'm figuring, you know, if I could actually sit down and have a conversation with the general of intel, you know, we could probably compare notes and, you know, say, yeah, is this what we're really looking at or not? You know, is Jan completely crazy like all of these attacks against myself and you? Or is this what was actually going on? So... You know, now you and I both agree that this was, in fact, the operation, that these are the exact tactics that are being used. You're the former head commander of this stuff, obviously. So it's not like you wouldn't have, you know, and obviously as you came out of that, being in that position, you can see in hindsight, which hindsight is always 20/20. You know, it's just like, you know, I'm an ethnomycologist. I've studied the history of psychedelic mushrooms. So how I figured all of this stuff out was researching the background of the so-called discoverer of magic mushrooms, which no one had done in 55 years, and it revealed this entire thing. So obviously, this guy Gordon Wasson intentionally caused disinformation against other researchers like John Allegro in England, etc., because Allegro's research led to exactly this now, what you and I are discussing here. And so, you know, it's essential for them to constantly be pumping out this barrage of disinformation and attacking people and using logical fallacies and making sure that kids in school don't have critical thinking skills. You know, and that is absolutely key.
Which is a shame because to start with youngsters. And what is the real intent?
Look at it in sense of yourself and how we started this interview when you were talking about when you were six and you got charged with that sense of going into the military. Would you agree that that was the conclusion that they wanted?
Did it go back that far? I don't know.
If they get us from kindergarten, we can only assume so, huh?
Well, the question is was my kindergarten under control way back when, or did the control come later? I don't know.
Yeah, well, we can tell that they had pretty well stripped most of the trivium out. You know, they were starting to shut down the single room schoolhouses and things because that was a real big threat. That was where the problem was. And once they got the kids divided into the separate grades, because obviously you learn the most when you teach something, right? So if an older child is teaching a younger child, well, then they're going to be very good teachers as well as students. And so the eighth grade graduation test was more complicated than most bachelor degree college students' graduation exams today.
Yep.
And, you know, so this is really where it went, and we can see that these things were stripped out in the, at the turn of the 19th century. So I don't know how old you are.
Do I dare say?
Well, that's up to you.
I'm 83.
83. So I think that would put you well within the time block that this would still would have been controlled, because that would be what the 1930.
Born in 1930, right?
Yeah.
February 1930.
And I think John Dewey and these guys were all really active by then, and as was Edward Bernays, and then we see them working out of the century again with, you know, Walter Lippmann and all these guys. So we do have these tie-ins there. I mean, it probably, you have a look on your face like you're not liking to hear some of this.
I don't like a lot of any of this.
That's for damn sure.
That I've been playing with, I don't like. Right. You know, the fact that I'm suddenly awake and aware and I'm learning every day of new pieces of this puzzle that is taking us down a very slippery slope as far as I'm concerned. I'm learning every day, and I don't like a lot of what I see, and I'm not exactly sure where we are headed at this stage of the game. Very frustrating, because I don't like a lot of the, incidentally, I call them dots. In the intelligence world, you have a whole series of dots. In the beginning, each piece of information is nothing but a dot.
Right.
And until you get enough dots, you don't know what the picture is. And it's very easy to take a whole bunch of dots and make a separate picture that is not the real picture that is being or should be presented.
Well, and you should always, you know, that's why you have to get in and check the actual citations and get down to the primary so that you always know that what you're resting on is the truth and not, you know, A or B. You can get down and, you know, like I said earlier, when there's a contradiction, we know that there's an error or a lie.
That's right. So, manipulation.
Right, and one of them has to go.
So I think we're in pretty close accord in terms of what's happening, because the dots that I'm putting together today don't make the kind of picture that I would like to see, frankly.
Well, and I agree with you there, and I think we both see quite a lot of it. So let me ask you, how did you and Rima meet?
Interesting story. I was headed to a conference in California, essentially one that I had put together on remote viewing and aspects. And I got a call one day at home, and this woman on the other end of the line said, "This is Dr. Labo." I didn't know Dr. Lebo from Adam's house cat. And she said, I'm going to the same conference that you're going to. Would it be possible to share a cab from San Francisco down to the conference? I said, certainly. I have no qualms about that. I'm going to rent. I had already planned to rent a car. I'm going to go. And you're going to be at the airport at the same time. Why take two cars? So I hung up, and my then practice wife said, who was that? I said, I have no idea. I have no idea what who she is. I've never met her, never talked to her. I have no idea. Well, of course, that turned out to be Rima, and we had agreed to meet at San Francisco Airport at a certain time. I arrived at the airport, and suddenly this woman, who I'd never laid an eyeball on, had only talked to very shortly on the telephone, came running across the luggage area and jumped into my arms. I didn't know who she was, but I will tell you this. What do you do with a woman who suddenly jumps into your arms who you don't even know? Okay? Well, there was only one thing to do, and that was kiss her. So I did. That turned out to be Rima.
Oh, and hi, by the way. Nice to meet you.
Oh, yeah. And oh, by the way, you think that the telephone call that my wife overheard didn't appear in the divorce court? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You got that right. But I never, ever laid an eyeball on this woman until she jumped into my arms. So, and we've been together ever since, and it's been wonderful.
What would you like to say on Aldous Huxley's Brave New World?
Tough to swallow. You know?
Yeah.
Listening?
I am listening.
Are you paying attention?
You mean me or them out there?
Them out there.
Gotcha.
You know, question is, can we wake up? You know, we're asleep. How many, what's the percentage that is even aware of what's going on? It's trivial. But let me tell you something. Time to wake up. It's time to take off the coverings and take off the, throw away the distortions and see, understand. Again, get the blinders off your eye. Get the earmuffs off your ears so that you're understanding exactly what's going on and where you're headed. Because if you don't do that, you're going to be taken in, and suddenly you're going to be a slave. Now, do you want to be a slave, or do you want to be a free person? Your choice. You know, and the time is now. Right now. You better get the earmuffs off and the eye blinders off and see and hear what's really happening, so that you then can make the choice of which do you want to be, free or a slave. Choose.
Wow, with a statement like that, is there any, you know, I was just going to ask you, what is the single most important concept that you would like people to take away from this interview? But I don't know if you could top that. Can you top that?
I think you just heard it.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was General Burt Stubblebine. Thank you so much for taking your time to speak with me and, you know, so candidly as well. And I know, you know, I still want to get that position of Aldous Huxley out of you one day. I might not let you slip on that or slide on that one.
One day.
One day.
We're going to talk again.
What's that? Okay. Well, you know, and yeah. Well, anyway. So thank you so much again, General Stubblebine, and I look forward to future communications with you. And once again, thank you for being so candid and for confirming so much of the work that we've been putting together here.
Thank you, Jan. It's been a pleasure. And we'll be talking, okay?
All right. Bye-bye.
Adios.